Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the mining podcast. And today's guest is Randy Smallwood, who's the president and CEO of Wheaton Precious Metals Corp, who are one of the largest precious metal streaming companies who offer investors cost predictability, direct leverage to increasing precious metal prices and high quality asset base. With a mining engineering and geology background, Randy's been involved in founding the company back in the day, and was also the VP of corporate development, primarily focusing on growing the company through evaluation and acquisition of streaming opportunities before moving into the CEO role back in 2011. Having served on a number of mining boards during his career, he's also currently active in a number of non-for-profit organizations, which obviously keeps him busy giving back to the mining community and business community. So that's welcome, Randy. He can obviously tell us a little bit more about his career and his background, and obviously talk about Wheaton Precious Metals. So that's welcome, Randy, to the podcast. How you doing, Randy?
Very good, Rob. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to a good, healthy discussion here. So
yeah, appreciate your time also. How we always start these podcasts off, we always want to know a little bit about the guest and about the career. And obviously, you've been in the resources industry for a very long time. So I wonder if you could just walk us through your career and what you've done during the course of your career. And maybe give us some insights that you generally wouldn't give on or out in the public domain that people may not know about yourself. So I'll hand it over to you just to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Great. Okay. Well, I think you kind of mentioned some of it, but at the risk of repeating some of that, I'm a geological engineer by background. I started off working in the exploration industry here in Canada. I'm based in Vancouver. Vancouver's been my home since I was 5 years old, I think. I don't remember anywhere else. So it's a beautiful spot to call home. And Canada, of course, is a great country from a perspective of resource development, resource opportunities and such. So I started off working as an exploration geologist, even though I had the engineering tag on the back end of it. I always kind of liked the math end of the equation a bit more. But I started off on the exploration side, working, really extremely rural grassroots generative exploration programs in northern Canada and Alaska, but through the northern part of North America, both in Canada and Alaska. And I had some success quite early in my career. And it's probably one of the real benefits that I've had that when I look around the industry, not a lot of people get this full experience, is that I started off as an exploration geologist. And we uncovered a couple of small but very high-grade gold ore bodies up in northern Canada. And I stuck with the team all the way through the development and the operation. To be an exploration geologist that then gets to do the resource estimate and then contributes to the feasibility study and oversees the feasibility study, then becomes the project manager during the construction, and ultimately becomes the mine manager. There's not a lot of people in this industry that actually get the full breadth of experience all the way from the initial discovery of a gold assay or a gold-rich piece of mineral specimen, all the way through to creating a mine and seeing the full benefits, but also understanding the efforts and such. And so I basically spent the latter part of last century dating myself here in the 1990s building but running a very successful little gold operation. We didn't produce a lot of gold, but the key point was we produced it profitably. And that's something that really reinforced it. We were producing gold for about $100 an ounce up in northern Canada. So that's even in the days when gold was trading down around $270, $280, $300 an ounce, we were still profitable at that mine. And it really kind of reinforced to me the importance of making sure that that there is something left after you go through all this effort, and making sure that there's something that you can continue to build on and go forward. So So yeah, started off working my way through to becoming a production manager, a mine manager, and then ultimately went corporate and started doing project evaluations back in the early 2000s. And created a company called Goldcorp that at its peak was actually one of the largest gold companies in the world. But I was leading the team from the corporate development perspective, looking at project evaluations, looking at projects, evaluating projects as to whether we were going to invest into those. And I still remember my CEO at the time, Ian Telfer, just reinforcing to me the importance of not so much, which mines that we should invest into, but stay away from the ones that we shouldn't invest into. And sometimes the most important ones are the ones that you say no to, the ones that you have to put, you have to put your hands up in front of the deal train. And so we had great success building Goldcorp, but one of the challenges with building a company like that is that you need access to capital. You need to fund that growth somehow. How do you pay for these acquisitions? How do you pay for the development, pay for the mine construction? And so this is where we came up with this whole concept of streaming. Was way back in 2003, 2004. What we recognized that we had at Goldcorp was a bunch of gold production, but we also had a whole bunch of silver production in the company itself. And when we looked at it and started trying to say, how can we, raise some capital? We thought, well, what happens if we take this silver and put it into a separate company and stream it into that company where it's got fixed costs? And, I wonder what silver investors would think of something like that. And this is back in 2004 when none of the silver companies, the existing silver mining companies at the time, were profitable. And here we were coming up with a structure that guaranteed profitability, that guaranteed that they wouldn't lose money. And so that was the start of what is now Wheaton Precious Metals. Back then it was called Silver Wheaton. And for the first, 10 years of that company's existence, we focused on silver. And what we realized, what we uncovered, was the fact that the bulk of silver produced worldwide around, it doesn't come from silver mines. It actually comes from about 40% of all the world's silver comes from lead zinc mines. It's a non-core byproduct from lead zinc mines. Another 20% comes from copper mines. Again, a non-core byproduct from these copper mines. And then another 15 to 20% comes as a non-core byproduct from gold mines. And so very little silver actually comes from silver mines. It's generally base metal mines that actually produce silver. And so what we uncovered was a way to unlock that silver production by investing in, by doing streaming agreements with these base metal mining companies to bring that silver into our company through a fixed cost structure where we make an upfront payment pay for the rights to a percentage of whatever silver gets produced from that mine. We share the project risk. So if we select good projects and put a lot of focus on selecting good projects, we get the benefits of that. And then as that silver gets delivered to us, we make a fixed payment. So there's no cost surprises. And so anyways, that was how Silver Wheaton started. To be honest, I worked for the first 7 years. I worked for both Goldcorp and Silver Wheaton. But in 2007, 2008, I swung over to Silver Wheaton on a full-time basis. And then, as you mentioned, 2011 became the CEO of the company. And at 2011, when I became the CEO, I kind of looked at where we wanted to go and realized that the silver market wasn't big enough for us. Up until that time, we had focused entirely on silver. By 2013, we invested heavily into the gold space. We actually now produce the bulk of our revenue, about 60 to 65% of our revenue. In fact, at these commodity prices, it's probably 65 to 70% of our revenue right now is coming from gold. So timely investments into the gold space has made us more of a gold company, but we're still interested in the broader precious metal space. That's what we're always pursuing. So I've been the CEO since 2011 and just having a lot of fun. It's a unique way to invest in and grow into the mining industry. We're continuing to grow. Last year was one of our busiest years ever, and we've got an incredible profile in front of us. So having a great time.
A lot of our listeners are from the actual mining industry. So whether they're in operations or even in a corporate function, so they could be mining geologists, mining engineers, geologists, etc. I just wondered if you could just And those that may know about streaming, and there might be some that don't actually fully understand the streaming model, I just wondered if you could just go in a little bit more detail as to how the streaming model actually works.
Sure, I'd love to. And it's interesting because we created the model back in 2004, and it gets binned in with royalties, but there's a lot of benefits over top of a traditional royalty. A royalty is just a registration on land for a percentage of revenues. And sometimes you can get a focus, but generally about 99% of royalties out there, just a percentage of revenues. And it's basically cut me a check every 3 months and I'll send in the auditors once a year. It's not a real relationship by any means. It's just, send me the cash. Streaming is much different. Streaming is based on a partnership. It's a partnership. It's an agreement between two entities, the operator and the streaming company. And we supply capital up front, and we supply capital, to help build that mine or to help pay for that expansion, or sometimes even to just pay down debt. But when we supply that large amount of capital up front, then when the percentage of metal, that's usually for a fixed percentage of whatever metal gets produced. And so the advantage of that is that it's not fixed numbers. We share the production risk with the operator. If production levels go up, then our percentage obviously climbs with that. But if production drops off, if grades drop off, then our share also drops with it. So we do share the production risk. We're willing to take that risk with the partners. And of course, we put a lot of focus into investing into good mines to make sure that hopefully we bias to the upside on that. But as that metal gets delivered to us, we also make a fixed production payment. In fact, more recently, it's more based on a fixed margin whereas an ounce of gold gets delivered to us, we'll pay 20% of whatever the spot price of gold is for that. But what that means is that, first off, the operator does get some compensation for the actual hard cost of producing that gold. They, of course, still have that upfront payment, that large upfront payment that they received from us originally to help build the mine and operate and expand the mine. But our shareholders get access to the other 80% of that metal value on a go-forward basis. And so it's a really cost-competitive way of supplying financing for the mining industry. And in fact, I would argue it's a lot more attractive, especially in today's day, than equity financing, where you're issuing shares. Most of these shares today are trading at substantive discounts to net asset value. When we do a stream, we base it on net asset value. We don't base it on any discounted valuation. And so we base it on the value of the metal, not the value of your equity. And that's the huge advantage in today's world. And that's one of the reasons why we've never been busier than we are right now. It's a great way, especially if you can think about it. If you're trying to build a copper deposit and you've got a bit of gold production in there, it's a non-core byproduct to you. People aren't investing into your company for the gold production. They're investing into your company because of the copper production. That's your core focus. And so gold is a non-core byproduct. And so portfolio optimization is a very effective business management tool in terms of, and what this does is take some of your non-core assets, you crystallize that value up front to help you fund the construction and the advancement of your core franchise on a go-forward basis. So it just makes sense on so many fronts. And we've had companies the size of Glencore. We've had multiple deals with Glencore, Vale, Barrick, Newmont. We've spent lots of time talking to the big companies, all the way down to the small companies. It works for the entire industry. It is a very, very effective way of raising capital, and especially in today's world. Very effective and cost competitive way of raising capital to help build your company.
And do you have any sort of key ingredients when you're analyzing a project or even analyzing a company that you're going to invest in? Is there sort of your top three key ingredients as to why you would invest in that particular project over another project or over that company over another company?
Yeah, we have there's one that's ultimately the most important of all. And it is that our operators, our partners have to be profitable. And so, we have this overlying mantra in our office, in our team that we're constantly thinking of. And I say this is one of the reasons why it's different than royalties is that this is a true partnership. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about, this overlying mantra is that the stronger our partners are, the stronger we are. So we owe it to our partners to try and help them be as strong as possible. And we are selective about which projects we invest into because the number one criteria that we have is that our partners need to be profitable. If they're not making a profit, the mine's not going to operate. And we can come in and do a stream on a high-cost operation, but if we wind up plucking out a part of the profits and all of a sudden the mine's not profitable anymore, it doesn't operate. Nobody wins. And so that's not, that's our real focus, is to make sure that we invest into high-margin assets so that the mine can handle both fluctuations in commodity price up and down, fluctuations in grade. Ore bodies are always different, and that it's still profitable for the operators. And so, you know, our partner's profitability is probably the number one criteria that we look at. Where does this asset fit on the respective cost curve? So if we're investing into a copper mine, where does that copper mine fit on a cost per pound of copper on the worldwide copper cost curve? And we're only interested in assets in the bottom half of that. And so 93 or 94% of our current production comes from assets that are in the bottom half of their respective cost curves. That's the number one criteria for us. You know, obviously there's a lot of other, you know, we pride ourselves because I think we've brought ESG into the streaming and royalty space. Way back in 2012, 2013, we were the first of the streaming / royalty companies to start investing into communities around the mine sites. Royalty companies traditionally have just washed their hands of that and left it in the operator's hands. That doesn't make any sense at all. You know, in today's world, we have to ensure that there's good sustainable benefits left with the communities around our mine sites. And we put a lot of effort into that. And so we now co-fund, and we kicked it off. And I hate, you know, I'm proud of the fact that what we've done is actually changed the industry now to where even the traditional royalty companies, the old school traditional royalty companies, are now co-funding community programs to, again, help strengthen social license and make sure that there's good sustainable benefits left for all the impacted stakeholders around these mine sites. And so that's another area that we put a lot of focus on. We really do look at these assets to make sure that, first off, you know, are they being operated the most effectively they can be in terms of making sure there's good sustainable benefits? Are there opportunities for us to help them do better? Is there stuff that we can help guide them forward? Where can we? Don't be scared of being a change agent. You know, we've steered some of our programs where we've through the negotiations of the contract I won't say forced, because you never want to say forced, but helped guide the company towards, say, putting in water treatment plants to try and improve overall impacts and such. And so, you know, it's also another area that's very important to us. But the first one, of course, is that our partners must be profitable.
Yeah. And obviously, apart from providing financial, obviously, assistance to a company or a project, do you get involved with the strategic direction of how the company and project advances itself over the course of, I don't know, many years, or their long, short, medium, long-term objectives?
Yeah, Rob, we're rich with advice, but we don't steer. In the end, it's one of the advantages. We're a great, and I'm not going to say a silent partner, because we're not silent. If we see things that we think can be done better, we make sure we share those thoughts. And we also have what we call a technical ambassador program, where we're happy to supply metallurgical support, geological support, engineering support, even social science support. We've had some of our technical teams seconded to sites to help improve operations, to improve resource estimation, to improve recovery rates, et cetera, et cetera. And so, we see lots of opportunities along that side, but we're a silent partner in the sense that we, you know, in the end, it's up to the operator to make the best decisions. And what we rely on is the fact that, you know, especially in copper mines, typically there's a very, very strong correlation between copper and gold. And so if a company focuses on maximizing its copper recoveries, it'll automatically also be maximizing its gold recoveries. And we, you know, this is one of the things that we test at the due diligence stage to make sure that we don't have any risks on that front. But typically our interests are very, very aligned with the operators. And what we do is try and be as supportive as we can to help them make better decisions. We do have an advantage in the sense that we see so many different assets. We probably visit on the order of 40 to 60 different mine sites a year, combined with our existing operations and new opportunities, some of which we do deals on, some of which we don't. But, you know, when you get that kind of exposure to this industry, you get a really good sense of what best practices are. You also get a sense of what worst practices are. And so, you know, we put a lot of effort into trying to help our partners be the best possible.
Obviously, the company's marking a significant milestone this year as it celebrates your 20th year anniversary.
Right.
Can you tell us about obviously the journey and I suppose more importantly, what you've achieved in those 20 years? And obviously, you mentioned when you started the company back in 2004, what major milestones would you say that you've made during those 20 years?
Well, I mean, we created the company in 2004. Back then, it was called Silver Wheaton. But I'm a bit embarrassed about the fact that for the first 3 or 4 years, we didn't even have any full-time employees in the company. It was basically a sidebar company that at that time, Goldcorp owned the majority of the shares in, and we were working for both companies. But I will tell you, 95% of my time was pushed towards trying to grow Goldcorp into the company it ultimately became. And we hardly, you know, every once in a while the phone would ring and someone would say, "Hey, you know that company you got, Silver Wheaton? Yeah, we got this lead zinc mine in Sweden. Would you mind having a look at it? Maybe we can do a silver stream off of it." So I go off to Sweden, look at it. Yeah, sure, that's good. And then I'd, you know, go back to working on Goldcorp, go back to working on Goldcorp. And 8 months later, Glencore calls up, "Hey, we've got this mine down in Peru. It's a lead zinc mine, produces a bunch of silver. We could use some capital. Would you mind going?" So then I go down to Peru and we did that. We didn't put a serious focus on Silver Wheaton for probably the first 3 or 4 years. I you know, and it's a shame because I think if we had taken it and ran with it, we were so focused on building Goldcorp back in those days, and that's when Goldcorp was at its prime. That we didn't put a lot of focus into Silver Wheaton really until 2007, and that's 2007 we finished the Glamis Goldcorp finished the Glamis acquisition, and I shifted over. Peter Barnes shifted over as the new CEO. I shifted over as EVP of Corp Dev, and that's when we started really putting the focus on growing Silver Wheaton. And from 2007 to 2011, we grew it substantially. I think we entered into about you know 15 different contracts. And just, you know, now it was us knocking on doors versus waiting for people to call us. And that's when people started to understand what the value of the streaming model was. And so, you know, those first years were, I mean, I hate to say it, it was probably a bit of a missed opportunity because we would have, you know, probably been able to acquire a lot of very, very attractive projects out there, especially in today's price environment, would have been a very attractive valuations. And so, nevertheless, you know, we did well on the Goldcorp side too, and so it was a good run. But you know, the other side of it is the shift into broader precious metals. In 2013 was the first major contract. We had a couple of other small little gold, you know, gold, silver and gold streams before that. But you know, the partnership with Vale, which started in 2013. Incredibly important partnership. Vale, one of the leading mining companies in the world. Everyone knows them for their iron ore production. What most people don't realize is they're also one of the best copper and nickel producers in the world. And you know, the Salobo mine is a true world-class asset that has just delivered so much to all the stakeholders, not just to us, but to Vale, to the communities. You know, it's a really, really great asset, and how that's transformed our company into such a significant force, and some of the other acquisitions we made. So it's been a great run. But I often you know wonder if we'd have hit the ground running back in 2004 versus sort of having it as a sort of a weekend hobby, how much farther we could have been.
Yeah, I was just going to say between 2004 and 2007, when you looked at some of those projects and you just carried on and discarded them, have any of those projects been a success? If you
Well,
look back, was there any that you look back now and think, I wish I had a little bit part of that now?
well, it was interesting because there was one that we rejected back in 2000, probably 2006 or 2007. But then in 2009, we took over a competitor. There was another silver streaming competitor in the space, and they had actually done a stream on that one asset, and it's still producing today to us, and we've done very well on that. And so we were able to clean up that mess indirectly. But yeah, we did miss a few opportunities back then, mainly because we were so. Yeah, as I said, our focus was on building Goldcorp, and it should have been probably more on building Silver Wheaton at the time.
Obviously, you're listed on New York, Vancouver, and London exchanges. Obviously, you must do a lot of traveling. How often are you able to sort of come and meet some of your investors and stakeholders in say London?
Yeah, it's the London market's important to us. We did list there, unfortunately, in 2020, right in the middle of COVID, and so it was one of the weirdest opening ceremonies, bell ringing ceremonies I've ever had, because we were in this office here in Vancouver at midnight trying to celebrate with bubbles across the pond, so to speak. We're actually coming back over again in August and bringing the board over to actually have a formal bell ringing ceremony with the London Stock Exchange. Finally, this year, we're going to get over there and actually do it in person. I get over to London, 5-6 times a year easily, and use London sort of as a base for not just the UK, but also the continent itself. And so, it's been a success. I wish there was more liquidity on London, but by being listed on London, what it does allow is a lot of UK funds to invest into us wherever the best liquidity is, which is of course the New York Stock Exchange. 70% of our shares trade on the New York Stock Exchange, about 28% or 29% of our shares trade on the Toronto Stock Exchange, and about 1% trades on London. So we don't see liquidity in London, mainly because we haven't had to raise any capital. Our company is so rich in cash flows right now that I don't know if we'll ever have to issue shares again to fund our growth. We've got such a strong growth profile and such a strong cash flow profile coming at us. The biggest challenge we have is being able to put the cash back to work. And so, that lack of liquidity in London is a challenge for us that we're going to continue to try and work on. But, we don't intend to issue new shares into London. We don't intend to issue new shares, period. What it does allow us to do, though, is it allows a lot of UK investors that have limitations, some of the pension funds that have limitations, they're now qualified to invest into us. And so we've seen, before we listed on London, we were at about 15 to 17% non-North American shareholders. We're now close to 30% with over 20% of that in the UK. And so, there definitely has been a benefit to being listed in London. I would hope that eventually we'll see more and more liquidity build up there.
Obviously, the gold price has witnessed obviously an outstanding run this year, going obviously higher highs. As a streaming company, how are you in a uniquely positioned to benefit from these rising gold prices?
Well, I've never been more excited about our future. We have been very, very busy over the last 4 or 5 years doing more than half of all the transactions in the entire space. And so we've made a large number of development acquisitions. And that seems to be where the sweet spot is right now within the industry, is that with the lack of equity support for most mining companies around the world, when it comes to equity financing, a stream does count as equity financing because we take the project risk. And so therefore, if you're going to issue shares or you're going to do a stream, is consummately way more attractive than issuing shares right now. And so if you've got a project at the pre-feasibility stage or beyond, and you've got something that can allow us to scope out what a production profile looks like on this asset, then we can come in with the stream financing and move that forward. And so the number of transactions that we've done really since 2018, the bulk of our transactions have been development type transactions, single asset or maybe dual asset companies that are trying to fund their growth, don't have enough internal cash flow to fund it, and so they come to us. And so we have got a number of projects coming into production, number of expansions coming into play, and a number of projects coming into production over the next 4 or 5 years. And so, we're perfectly positioned for this kind of a market right now because we've got about 40 to 50% growth in production over the next 5 years. And so you combine that with what commodity prices are trending right now. It's astounding where we, I myself am just blown away at the potential, the amount of people ask me, what do you lose sleep over, right? I lose sleep over how I can effectively put this capital back to work. Now, there's only two places for the capital to go. It goes back into the ground or we grow the dividend. And so, I have committed and we have committed even earlier this year that we will commit to a progressive dividend that will deliver growth to our shareholders on a regular annual basis over the near term. It could be quite healthy given these commodity prices, because I'm not sure we can put the money back into the ground fast enough for as fast as what we're going to see it over the next 4 or 5 years. So an incredibly exciting time. By far one of the strongest growth profiles in the entire precious metal space. I'm not talking just royalties. I'm talking gold mining, precious metals mining. To have a company of our size and have a 40 to 50% growth profile over the next 4 or 5 years is without comparison right now.
Given Wheaton has obviously partnerships around 20 operating mines, obviously you've spoken a little bit about this. Obviously, M&A is obviously a huge part of the business focus. What considerations are you bearing in mind when obviously evaluating a mining partner? And sort of what transactions have you been focused on sort of more recently? And obviously also the jurisdictional risks as well. And we're seeing obviously a lot of certain countries, governments playing them obviously a major part in mining within those jurisdictions. So just wondering if you could also sort of cover that as well. What jurisdictions maybe you more focusing on now rather than maybe previous years?
Sounds good, Rob. Definitely jurisdiction. There's a number of factors that feed into our decisions, and each project is very, very unique. And first off, for us, it's more about investing into the asset, not the company. People talk about, how important it is to have a good team. The challenge that we face is that when we invest into a mine, it's a life of mine investment, and people change. And so the asset better be good enough. I think it's Warren Buffett that said that, you should invest into foolproof companies because inevitably a fool will run those companies. We are long-term investors, and so therefore we have to make sure that the assets that we invest to are strong enough to withstand bad management teams. Because eventually, if you've got a mine that's going to be running 40, 50, 60 years, there will be a bad management team in there at one time or another. And we need the mine to be able to withstand that and survive that. And so, it is, again, going back to operating margins, that's one of the key things that we look at, is making sure that the assets are very profitable, have low operating costs, high operating margins, and therefore it not only will it survive through challenging times, but it's also the first place that our partners reinvest exploration dollars and expansion capital to, because they're high margin assets that deliver those returns. But the other aspects, political risk is something that we are very, very sensitive to. And if you look at our distribution, now we are pretty heavily biased towards the Americas, but a lot of that comes from the fact that we were focused on silver for the first 10 plus years of our existence, our first 10 years of our existence. And most silver comes from Mexico and Peru and China, but China for us is not investable. Mexico and Peru were a real core part of our focus. And that's one of the reasons that we're so America-centric, is that there's just not a lot of silver in Africa. There's a bit of silver in Australia, but spotty. Some big silver producers, but very, very spotty. And then the bulk of Asia is a little bit more challenging to invest into. And so, but we have more recently, and in fact, last year was kind of exciting. We have expanded into South Africa. We partnered with Ivanhoe now down at the Ivanplats Platreef Reef project down in South Africa, which is one of the most incredible projects from it's gonna turn the platinum palladium market on its ear when it gets up and running, just because of the scale and the size and the costs there. It's a good strong project, and we've been watching Robert Friedland and the Ivanhoe Group advance that slowly. They've been focused a lot more on copper in the Congo of recent, but they're now shifting some of that cash flow back towards getting Platreef up and operating, and we're expecting to see production from them early in 2025 from that mine site. And it'll hit full stride back in I think it's 28 or 2029. It'll hit full stride, and it'll be in a it'll change the platinum palladium market. It's a significant asset. We've also just recently invested for the first time into Australia through Vista Gold on the Mount Todd gold project there. It is a small scale investment, but it gives us a foothold in Australia. And Australia definitely is a country that we are interested in. We just haven't had much success down there. It is a country that their pension funds do a lot of reinvesting back into the country, and it does a really good job of supporting itself. And so there's been an abundance of capital there that you haven't seen in other markets around the world that we've been competing against. And so it's taken us a bit to get our foot in the door there, but we now have our foot in the door, and we think there's going to be some other opportunities in Australia. So political risk is something that's important to us. We do factor it into how we value an asset. Corporate partner risk is also something that factors into it. If you've got a good strong partner from a creditworthy risk, that allows us to use a lower cost of capital because the risk profile is lower. And so it is something that I think we haven't changed since we started this company. We're very, very focused on how we measure risk because that's how we have to adjust for the reward that we expect from these assets as they go forward. So it's just something that really drives our decision-making process.
Obviously, I imagine you obviously compete for deals with other streaming royalty companies in with obviously within your space. How do you maintain a competitive edge?
I think it goes back to, as I mentioned, the other streaming and royalty companies that we're competing against, they're the old royalty companies. And so they were never built on a foundation of partnership. They were just built on registrations on land and send me the check every 3 months. I know that because back when I operated that mine way back in Northern Canada, I had a royalty on that asset. And once every 3 months, I get a call from that royalty owner. Where's my check? Where's my check? And then once a year, he would send in an auditor and they would argue because their royalty only covered part of the ore body that we were mining. And they would always argue that I was taking more from their ore body, but not reporting it and so on. And it was not a positive relationship. It was a very negative relationship with the, and that's very typical of the royalty space. And so how do we differentiate ourselves? We're not a royalty company. We never have been a royalty company. We're a streaming company. A streaming company is based on partnerships, and it unlocks value in many ways that a royalty does not unlock value. So much so that the traditional royalty companies have had to change themselves into streaming companies. If you look at the Royal Golds and the Franco-Nevadas of the world, the traditional royalty companies, the bulk of their revenue now comes from streams. They have now shifted to being streaming companies, but they still have that background, that royalty background, and that's basically how they were built. That's their foundations, and so we really put a lot of focus on the partnerships, and it reflects in the fact that last year we did 8 different transactions, and 6 of them were with people or companies that we have worked with in the past, and 5 of those 6 weren't even competitive. They didn't go out to that space. So it really comes down to being a partner of choice, focusing on trying to help our existing partners be the best they can. Again, back to that overlying mantra, the stronger our partners are, the stronger we are. And what that does is it builds strong relationships, which allows them to, in the future, when they decide they need access to more capital, you know what? We enjoyed working with Wheaton. Let's give Wheaton a call. And to have 5 of those 8 transactions last year be non-competitive, where our peers didn't even get a chance to bid on these projects, that says a lot. So we're doing something right there. But that's not something we're going to sit back and rest on. We have to make sure we continue to find ways to help our partners be stronger. And so it's something that we're always working on, is trying to provide that support on a broader basis. I think some of that comes from the fact that myself as CEO, I do come from the mining space. I've built and operated mines, and so I understand how challenging, how hard it is. And so having that foundation of respect, I think, kind of feeds through into our approach to our partnerships.
Yeah. You've obviously been in the industry for quite a few decades. Is there, and I, and sorry, I,
Way, this is silver hair, not gray.
but is there anyone that you're inspired by, or is there, and obviously we learn all the time, and even no matter how experienced you are, you're always learning. Are you inspired by anyone within the mining industry, or is there anyone that you, I don't know, maybe class as a mentor that you often take advice from? And you don't, it's up to you if you want to mention any names, but is there anyone that you're inspired by, or is there anyone that you regularly get, not necessarily mentored for, but get advice from in the industry if you've got a decision that you're unsure and you want to get that decision validated by?
From 2001, from the year 2000 to 2007, I worked with Ian Telfer, who was the CEO of Goldcorp. An incredible man, in his ability to put a team together, and I loved some of the lessons I learned from him. Right, it's not really important who's in which job. It's a matter of making sure you have the right people on the bus. And because if you got the right people on the bus, they'll sort themselves out in terms of making good decisions and such. And so his ability to select good people and to build a good, strong team, I think, was one of the best I've ever seen. His ability to inspire, to get people excited, but to recognize that there's as much importance in saying no to a decision as there is in saying yes. And I always remember that. You know, when he first joined the company back in 2000, I was actually already there as an exploration geologist. I was doing a bit of corporate development, but not a lot. And I remember him coming into my office and saying, you know, Randy, I'd love you to stick around. He had just joined as the new CEO. And to be honest, his track record prior to that wasn't very rosy. And I was considering leaving. But he sat down in my office and he said, Randy, he says, I'd love you to stick around and help us build the best gold company in the world. The challenge, and this is his words, he says, the challenge I have is that Ian recognized, he says, I don't know the difference between a bad mind and a good mind. That's why I need you. And he said, more importantly, he says, I don't mind, you know, the occasional investment not being as bright and rosy as it was, but keep me away from the bad minds, right? You know, that's the most important decision you make, is the ones that we stay away from. He's just a good, strong mentor. And we still get together once every 6 months. He's retired now and traveling the world. I think he's over in Japan on a cruise right now, but we're having dinner in about a month here in Vancouver. And definitely a man that I have immense respect for. And I don't think it's quite, you know, recognized what he contributed, not only to Goldcorp, but he revolutionized the World Gold Council. I just finished off 3 years as the chair of the World Gold Council. He took over, I think he was the chair of the World Gold Council for 4 years and brought in the gold ETF and modernized that whole program. I mean, he's left his mark on the industry, and I just don't think he gets as much respect as he deserves in this in the gold industry, definitely. And so immense respect for him.
Yeah. You're on various boards. And I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about those boards. And I suppose, what value do you add to those boards? What you may have learned from the mining industry that you're giving to those boards? And I know some of those boards are not in the mining industry. So, yeah, what kind of values are you adding to them that you've learned from the mining industry?
Well, I think it's a matter of just sharing. I've had incredibly good fortune in my career and my life, and I think anyone that's had the good fortune that I've had, you know, you owe it back to society to contribute where you can. So, you know, I'm very involved in the cancer space. I spent 6 years as a board member of the BC Cancer Foundation, which is probably the second biggest cancer research institute in Canada, behind Princess Margaret in Toronto. I've chaired Special Olympics on and off for the last 15 years. I tell you, if you ever want inspiration in terms of recognizing how fortunate we are, but also just the little successes in life and how important they are, get involved in Special Olympics. It's an incredible program that just inspires and motivates and captivates so many people that have mental disabilities, and it's just such a great, strong program. I chaired the World Gold Council. I'm still very active in the World Gold Council. It's an incredibly strong program that has done a lot on the central bank research, but we're also advancing rapidly on a digitalization of gold, and we think that within a year we'll have a very effective way for commodities, including gold. We're focused, of course, on gold, but it could be effective with any commodity to be digitally traded instantly with no lag time, no delay time, and which should dramatically improve liquidity within that space. And I think today's world, today's market demands, you know, is looking for opportunities like that. And so, part of Mining for Life, part of the founding group for Mining for Life, which is a charity that raises money, an annual event that we run at the PDAC in Toronto that raises close to $3 million a year towards children's hospitals, both Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto and and BC Children's Hospital here in Vancouver. And we've got a couple of global programs that we support on children's health. And so a few other things, Minerals Ed, which is an education program that helps provide education resources to public school systems for the resource sector. And actually, we've got an interesting program here. We're starting off called the Vancouver Mining Collective, which is once every 3 months we bring in a character to talk about their life and to inspire others. You know, one of the challenges we have in this resource industry is that there's not a lot of youth coming into the industry. And so we need to share some of the experiences and some of the positives that come out of a responsibly run resource sector. The world needs resources. Mm-hmm. And so the real challenge that we have as a society is how do we do it with the smallest footprint possible, with the smallest impact possible, and the maximum benefit with the least effect? And so that's a constant challenge that we as a society need to work towards. And so the Vancouver Mining Collective is a group that tries to inspire youth and students towards stepping into this space and filling our shoes as we retire out of this industry. So yeah, it's you got to give back. In fact, a lot of times it continues to inspire me in terms of the impact that you see for that. So it's very important to me.
And lastly, what's the outlook for Wheaton over the sort of next 6 to 12 to 18 months?
Incredible. Just the amount of growth that we've got coming at us, combined with the. The potential for gold prices. You know, as I watch so many of the analysts and the banks out there raising their gold price forecasts, and you hear people talking about $3,000 per ounce, just do the math. Our company is climbing rapidly towards 1 million gold equivalent ounces per year of production. And you start looking at the margins, our operating margins are between 75% to 80%. Just do the math. These are some of the most exciting times that Wheaton's ever had in front of it.
Randy, really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on to Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. If our audience wants to reach out to you, I know you're probably pretty busy, but if they want to follow your story, follow Wheaton Precious Metals, how can they go about doing that? Are you on social media platforms, your company, advertising what you do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I will say I've got a team that sort of tries to keep me more active. I'm not much of a social media person myself. I do read it, but I'm not as active. But by all means, we've a good website out there. The investor relations team is out there. The corp dev team, there's contact details there. Please reach out. We're more than happy to meet. We get through the UK on a very regular basis. Going to be over there in May, June, August, October, November. Be happy to meet and talk. Always love a good chat about this industry.
Yeah, certainly. Well, thank you again for coming onto the podcast. Really appreciate your time. And hopefully our audience will reach out to you and obviously follow your story.
A real pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Hope you enjoyed that episode. As always, really appreciate your continued support. Please keep sharing these episodes far and wide to everyone in our mining industry and also people outside of our mining industry, because we need to improve the branding of mining across the globe. So please appreciate you sharing these to people outside of our industry, and especially this particular episode, especially if someone wants to invest in the precious metal space, there's no better company than to have a look at Wheaton Precious Metals. So as always, thank you for listening. And until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining, helping each other to improve the mining industry.